Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our theme for today is courage. And sometimes it takes a lot of courage just to face life, but we're going to talk about how to develop that courage within us. We have a founder, and our founder is Alice Bailey, and she's written 24 volumes of literature. And all of the dialogue that you'll hear on this show emanates from the works of Alice Bailey, as does the following quote. Permit the courage of your soul to strengthen you. This courage is not a fighting courage or any sort of struggle to be what is called brave. It is the courage of sure knowledge, held steadily and unquestioning in the midst of difficulty and discomfort. And that's a different approach to courage, and I certainly want to know a lot more about that. What is the difference between the courage of the soul and the fighting courage of the brave?
I think it's almost comparing the effect of the rush of adrenaline on the physical body versus the stamina of someone who is tenacious enough to persist in a quiet, low-key way at a certain task. It brings to mind that myth of the tortoise and the hare. And the hare had the adrenaline to rush forward, but the one who won the race was the tortoise, who had the stamina and the persistence and the drive to keep going, even though at his own measured pace. I think there is a biological reaction in the kind of courage that is, I suppose, the fighting courage of the brave, which would include anyone who's in an experience of threat to his physical being or to a threat to his loved ones. Whether you're in a war, or if you're being attacked in a crime, or your house is on fire, or your car is in an accident, or whatever, I think there's a kind of a physical impulse that nature provides to get you out of a situation. And as I understand it, which is pretty minimal, the adrenaline rush that takes over, speeds up the heart, and gives one a surge of energy and an impulse that enables you to react very, very quickly to salvage yourself, mm-hmm. or to salvage your loved ones. And so it's, to me, it's an aspect of how biology is a God-given attribute. Our bodies have their own wisdom and their own sense of reason and purpose. Sometimes you'll hear of soldiers doing the most amazing things in time of war for themselves and for their fellow soldiers. Or you'll hear about the mother who lifts the car off of her baby. Every now and then you hear, and she doesn't know afterwards where that strength came from, and she couldn't duplicate it. Mm-hmm. But at the time she came up with it because circumstances demanded it. That's the courage of the brave. But the courage of the soul is quite another matter. It's the endurance and the long suffering sometimes, and the quiet will to persist in spite of difficult circumstances.
I think these two are related, the courage of the soul and the courage of the brave, you know, the acts of the brave, the fireman going into the building mm-hmm. and so forth. I think the courage of the soul is probably a higher correspondence to that lower courage that you spoke about of the adrenal rush. And they're like polar opposites, but...
One and the same, essentially.
One and the same. Oh. You know, they're of the same polarity. I mean, the same pole, but of two different, of the opposite ends. And but I think what is interesting is what motivates in each case. Mm-hmm. There's a similarity of motivation, as I understand it. In each time, they're involved a saving force. The, as you say, the mother wants to save the child pinned under the car, or the soldier, you know, who has performed some brave act on the battlefield, saves his buddies and the lives of his buddies and his squad and so forth. And also the courage of the soul to persist. I think there is involved in salvaging the lower nature and the redeeming of the lower nature.
How do you mean?
Well, I think that's impulse from the soul that provides the strength. It corresponds to that kind of adrenaline rush, but it's the influence of the soul that suddenly comes through and provides the wisdom and the strength to persist and to lift up everything in the lower nature. And we can get into this more discuss in this program, but the two are related, the higher and the lower expressions of courage.
Well, I was thinking about the word itself, courage. Isn't it from the root cœur, which is French for heart? I think it probably is from that same word root, which implies that it's a quality of the heart, which, as we know, is the life aspect. And you, a minute ago, almost defined it as an expression of the life, which it is. That's the salvaging aspect.
Yeah, just as the our animal nature has been given this mm-hmm. salvaging ability
through the adrenal glands,
and which relates to the lower astral nature, the lower astral plane, and provides the strength to do these impossible things. That comes, we inherit actually through the animal nature,
mm-hmm.
and it's passed on through all these eons of time. But at the higher end, I think the soul provides the same thing for the disciple or for the more spiritual person to persist and also work at salvaging and saving. It's kind of the saving force in each case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as we know, in all spiritual development, as above, so below. So the biology of a human being is the lower counterpart of this high quality of the soul. You're right. Yeah. And yet this opening thought said that the kind of courage of the soul is the courage of sure knowledge, held steadily and unquestioning in the midst of difficulty and discomfort. So there's that aspect of continuity and tenacity, that ability to persist and not to waver, in even though there are tests and obstacles to one's continuing, one does. And that brings in the spiritual will. The refusal to give up, the refusal to let go of one's convictions or ideals or standards or whatever the issue centers on that mm-hmm. requires courage. And that's a special kind of long-term spiritual vision that takes real courage to display. That's, I guess, what I mean when I say it's so different from the adrenaline rush that makes one act spontaneously. But both are expressions of the salvaging power of life itself to persist.
Yeah. I guess courage can be controversial at times. I remember one time when I was in charge of a group of teenagers, and a person came to the door and challenged me and wanted to come in, and I said, you're not coming in. And I saw the security guards backing away, and I stood my ground. Mm-hmm. It turned out that I wasn't wearing my glasses, and he had a large gun sticking out of his pants, and I was given credit for all this courage, and I really didn't have any I didn't have any courage at all. I'm nearsighted, and I wasn't wearing my glasses. So
God looks after us, doesn't he?
So I guess courage is really when you have fear and you face it and you do it anyway, what you have to do. But where does courage come from?
I think it comes from experience and from testing. I don't know if anybody is born particularly brave. I think there's probably an assumption that the brave, courageous people are just sort of born that way, and that's an inherent part of their temperament. But there are a lot of people who have displayed incredible bravery that would say they had no choice, and that, in fact, their fear was deep and almost overwhelming, in mm-hmm. spite of the courage they displayed. Usually, very brave people will say that, in fact, they felt enormous fear, mm-hmm. but that it didn't stop them. And I think it's the ability to look the fear in its face and yeah. and continue, to not let it overcome you.
It's looking beyond oneself, too, and the, it's looking at the situation, and there's a reaching out tendency there to help and to save mm-hmm. that is very strong.
Yeah. A larger goal, you mean?
Yeah.
A larger
yeah.
vision?
It's one steps outside of himself or herself and is able to do these acts of courage.
The testing aspect, though, can be a surprise. I know in my own life I've been surprised at the times when I've been tested, when I've been very, very afraid to do something. I can remember at the time being overwhelmed with fear and also being absolutely determined to do this task because I simply felt I had to. Mm. And I guess the assumption was that something would get me through it. And I think that a lot of people who have had to deal with a lot of fear in their lives draw upon that sense that if they go forward with something that seems necessary and right, that somehow they'll make it through. And I was reading just the other day in the paper about a woman who had undergone a lot of testing in her life, physical illness and personal sorrow, and she had gone through it all because she had no choice. And she felt a little embarrassed when people would say how brave and courageous she was because she said, I had no choice. Mm-hmm. It was also the way she was raised. She said her mother would, when they were children and were ill, their mother would give them about 2 days to get over it. And then they were supposed to be back on their feet. Yeah. So I suppose that early conditioning of getting on with life and not indulging in self-pity helps an awful lot.
Yeah.
But where does courage come from? I don't know. People like Eleanor Roosevelt have spoken about it. She was someone who dealt with a lot of personal fear, mm-hmm. was very, very shy as a girl, very shy, very... she suffered from inferiority, from a sense of not being wanted, of being unloved, worthless. She really, psychologically, was very troubled as a young person. So she knew all about fear. And she said that you gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You just stare it back. Like a big bear, you stare it down. And she said, you have to do the thing you think you cannot do. I think that's the same thing that compelled me. I really know what she means. You have to do the thing that you are convinced you cannot do. There's some test there that...
Yeah. And that that test brings up the deepest spiritual strength that you can... Mm-hmm. You realize it's there all the time, and you mm-hmm. can bring it forth, but it just needs that point of tension, perhaps, to bring it out.
Yeah, it's refusing to take the easy way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and today we're speaking about courage. That's our theme for today, and also it's important to say that if you enjoy these shows, as so many people have said that they do, that all the work of the Lucis Trust, including this radio program, is funded by the voluntary donations of people like yourselves who support the goals of the Lucis Trust. We are not endowed, nor do we have a wealthy benefactor who helps to pay for this program. We depend on the donations, large and small, of individuals, so please give if you want these programs to continue on the air. And there are so many people who want to know what Lucis Trust is all about. And it's hard to say it briefly, but I guess if I had to, what I'd say is that we're not a religion. We're a spiritual philosophy organization, and I guess that best defines us. If you come to one of our meetings, you'll meet people from all walks of life, many backgrounds, and I suppose the one thing that they all have in common is the desire to improve mankind, and I think that is one of the major themes of Lucis Trust, from my point of view anyway. And you're certainly welcome to attend our meetings, but if you'd like to know more about us, you certainly may. We'll be happy to send out a general package of information to you. It'll contain a lot of material on Lucis Trust, how you can contact us, what meetings we have, how you can attend, and we'll be delighted to send that out to you. All you have to do is give us a call on our toll-free number, and we'll accommodate you. The number is 1-866-695-8247. Once again, the toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247 for that general package of information. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York Lucis, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. And by the way, if there are people out there who would like to make a donation to help us keep us on the radio, that would certainly be appreciated, no matter how small it might be or how large. Donations can be sent to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, if there's any one book out of the 24 volumes that would probably be a good one to read, it would be Ponder on This, which is more or less a compilation of Alice Bailey's works and a cross-section of many of the major themes throughout the other books. To get back to our show on courage, is courage needed in spiritual development? Because that's certainly what Lucis Trust is primarily about.
Yes, absolutely. Courage is needed. There's a question that is asked of every aspirant, every applicant at the door of spiritual knowledge, and it is, have you counted the cost? And many people will respond by saying, well, what cost could there possibly be? It'll be only good. It's only right and beautiful what I'm asking to enter into. And then they find that there is indeed a cost. It can be quite devastating and yet so subtle. And it takes courage to endure the cost that you pay. Everything comes at a price. Everything of value has a price. And the same is true of the spiritual path. It has a price in the sense that, for one thing, one's closest friends and loved ones may not necessarily stand by you and applaud. In fact, they might be quite disappointed and withdraw. And that comes as a great surprise to people. They think that people around them should welcome and support their decision to, say, undertake a daily pattern of meditation and spiritual study. In fact, people can resent these things because it takes the person away from them. It takes their time in another direction. That person used to be available to them during the time that he now spends in spiritual practices of some sort, and that's resented. Or they might just resent the fact or fear the fact that you're becoming different. They are afraid that you might move on or move away from them in consciousness, in interests, in the things you enjoy in life. You won't be the same, and it's probably true, you won't be. And they sense this, and they can become quite fearful and resentful. Those are just a few of the costs. The other aspects have to do with one's own inner obstacles, where you might want to start developing more spiritually, but then all of these obstacles come up like other interests, your favorite pastimes, your desire to learn French, your desire to play the piano. I mean, the mind and the emotional nature can throw up all kinds of reasons why you just don't have the time or the energy to develop spiritually.
Right. It's takes courage to break away from the normal, or what we perceive to be the normal, established patterns of living and thinking and believing and behaving. And so, as you say, one is beginning to, as we say, step on the path, and that path perhaps is a different, going off in a different direction than one's family or loved ones or friends. They may be staying on their own particular path, and you, as you follow your particular path, may take you off in a different direction in consciousness. I'm not saying physically you're moving away, but your consciousness is moving off in a different direction, and it's maybe becoming more inclusive. And this presents problems, as you just said. It's a difficult thing to take into account and to handle, but it's extremely necessary. And the strength one gets to do this comes from the soul, as we've said earlier.
So. I think there's no underestimating the loneliness of the spiritual path. That's one of the costs that takes quite a lot of courage to endure. You might think that you would move into a realm of greater identification with your fellow man, and you do. But at the same time, on a personal level, you might feel more isolated. It's a very odd phenomenon, but I think many people who begin to take themselves in hand find this, because chances are they find very few people around them who think as they do, and they're breaking loose from a kind of social or group attitude, whatever group or whatever element of society they've associated themselves with. They're breaking away from that and trying to move into a new realm. And it's inevitably, for at least a certain stage of the way, rather lonely. And I think it's that, again, is a kind of a soul-imposed experience, because you have to learn to stand on your own feet. You have to learn to think for yourself. You have to learn to turn inward for your guidance and not always be looking to the world around you to tell you what you should think, what you should do, what you should value.
But the strength to do that, as we've said, comes by way of the soul, because that whole stepping onto that path into the world of the soul provides nourishment in the form of knowledge, greater knowledge and wisdom. That provides the strength. Because it, as I said in the opening quote today, it is courage of sure knowledge held steadily and unquestioning in the midst of difficulty and discomfort, and that's really what one becomes in possession of, more knowledge that provides the incentive and the motive to keep going.
And I think that's where one of the failures of courage happens with a lot of spiritual seekers. They don't act according to whatever knowledge they do possess. And we all do have a certain amount of knowledge in terms of spiritual values and moral precepts. Not all of us are equal in the knowledge that we possess, but we all have a higher knowledge that we could live by if we so chose. And so many people fail to live up to the highest they know. They don't live up to the best in them. We can't be more than we are, but we can be, to use a cliche, the best we can be. We can live according to our highest standards, whatever those might be. And so, when we fail, that's a loss of courage.
never betray the best within you.
Yeah, right.
Do you think it takes more courage to live in today's world than it did to live in earlier times?
Maybe. I don't know. Earlier times had their own terrors and traumas. I mean, we're about to see the Civil War series again on PBS, and mm-hmm. certainly that was a terrible time. During the World War of this past century, that must have been a horrendous time.
I think the fears are, and the courage needed today is perhaps of a different nature.
Mm-hmm.
Just sometimes you need courage just to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
If you live in the the large metropolitan areas where we're now today we're subject to threats of terrorism and all that. So if you let those things get in the way and possession of you, then it can be quite terrifying, and it takes courage to face just the daily trials.
And I think people today are more psychologically sensitive than in the past, that maybe the stimulation of the times, we've talked about the spiritual energy that's so much more heightened today than it was even a few decades ago. I think that does exact a cost in terms of the stress that people are under. They feel acutely sensitive to the undercurrents that are in the world, and that's part of the fear and the confusion today. And yet we're told in the writings of Alice Bailey that we should take comfort in the assurance that love rules all, and that we are supported by spiritual beings on the inner planes that we might not realize. We're given more help and more guidance than we might be aware of, and we should take courage from that. It is, after all, love that rules the world. The world is, as Einstein said, a friendly place, and we are developing toward something, I think, wholly good.
Absolutely. And the big thing to keep in mind is the soul, the presence of the soul is always there, mm-hmm. and that's who you really are, and that will provide the strength you need to just to cope with the terrors of the world today, I think.
And once again, we'll be happy to send that information out to you free of charge if you just give us a call. 1-866-695-8247. Easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York LUCIS. That's about all the time we have for our discussion today. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called The Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.